Hello, and welcome to yet another thrilling episode of My Dog Will Eat My Face. If you are a regular listener, well, not that so much, and if you just listened to my previous podcast, you have been made aware that I was excited to get some blood work done. In this past week, because it was something that I had personally been pushing for, just for my own benefit, to better gauge the velocity of my heart failure and what's essentially going on with that. What came as a result, though, of that blood work is now something that I have to, I suppose, endure, whether I want to or not. And this week, I'm just going to basically share what I had learned from that recent blood work. And beyond that, I'm really not sure where things are going to go. But I'm going to sort of play it by ear. Because some things were not tested at all that I've been waiting to get tested for quite some time now, for various reasons, and it was kind of disappointing, needless to say. And I'll talk about that further on. So I am probably going to push for some additional testing, because one of the big ones I wanted basically didn't get tested, or it failed to follow proper, I guess, protocol with the blood that they took to be able to test that certain component. And like I said, I'll get into all that later on. So I think that in the immediate future, I'm certainly going to be pushing to still get that additional blood work done one way or another, and then, well, I suppose concurrently with that, none of this is in a sequence, concurrently with that, I have to deal with the results that I did get and those ramifications for me and what I'm at risk at, or what I'm at risk for, I suppose is the proper English. find a way to, I suppose, adapt to that paradigm. Because that's really the only option. There is absolutely no sense in arguing with blood work. It's one of those few things where it just is what it is. I mean, I could demand a second opinion, but that would be just kind of stupid. Because it's just a number reflective of a component in my blood that indicates X, Y, and Z. And so this is actually, I think, one of those rare cases with medical science where it just sort of is what it is. It'd be stupid to look at it differently or argue it. And so it's really the onus all put on me to somehow adapt to things as they are, because I really don't have any other option. So this week, that's exactly what I'm going to be talking about. And without further ado, let's get this party started. So, as I begin to talk about those results, let me start with the good news. And that's about it. There was no good news. Gallows humor. Anyway, but I am serious. There was no good news out of it whatsoever. Not that I was actually expecting any. I guess the surprise was that there was some bad news in areas that I really wasn't even expecting. But there was also bad news in areas that I actually was kind of expecting, but perhaps not to the severity that was communicated to me. So I'm going to call that the good news. At least in my case, the good news is the news I was kind of expecting, even though it was more severe than I expected. There, that's the new good news category. And the bad news will just be all bad, yes. All around. Just, it was surprising. It was bad news, and that's it. Anyway, so let me start with the expected bad news that was just more severe than I was ever expecting. God, I'm grasping at straws here, man, to find some silver lining. Anyway, that news relates actually to my hold on, give me a minute. What do you call it? The, oh, for crying out loud. Anyway, I forget what the broader category is called for this moment. I'm having a total brain fart. A neuron is misfiring somewhere. But anyway, the bad news I was expecting was with respect to my potassium levels, which were tested in a larger encompassing area. And for some crazy reason, I can't think of what that's called. But it included potassium, among other things. So, a little bit of background. Excuse me. I'll cut out my dying hacks and coughing, I promise. I'll cut that out at the end. The bad news I was expecting was with respect to potassium. And so a little history to that is, oh golly, for as long as I can honestly remember, whenever my potassium was tested, it was really bad. It was really low, and in several instances, something that they called critically low. And in fact, there was one time when I was just doing an urgent care visit where they just did a basic metabolic panel test on me, and amongst that was potassium. And the urgent care's opinion was that I needed to stop everything I was doing, pass go, do not collect $100, and get my butt straight to the ER. And they were even picking up their phones to say, we will call an ambulance right now, in fact. And I had to almost physically restrain them from doing that. And it's really because that's not that new to me. All my life, for as long as I can remember, I struggled with maintaining my potassium levels for one reason or another. The biggest reason, of course, as of late, is because of the heart failure and the diuretics I was put on because of the heart failure. Because in case you're not aware, When you are suffering from heart failure, the heart is losing the ability to pump the blood, the fluid, throughout your circulatory system in an appropriate manner. And what results often is edema, which is just a symptom to where blood begins to pool in certain areas. Quite often it's going to be in the extremities, such as the feet or lower legs or the hands. And also, for some reason in men, it can also swell. Well, it can pretty much swell anywhere. But another common area, man, is it swells in the tummy. So it looks like you have a beer belly when you're just like eating salad 24/7. It doesn't matter. You'll have a little, like, a little Buddha belly come out of nowhere. What that is, again, that's just fluid, blood pooling in these areas because your heart's getting weaker and weaker, and it can't get that circulation that it needs to get those fluids out of there and re-oxygenated. Wow, I said it right on the first go, maybe one and a half go. Anyway, to get that blood to the heart and then deliver it back to those areas to deliver the oxygen, right? So that's very common with heart failure. In fact, for a lot of people in advanced heart failure, they start to kind of blow up like they're Michelin Man or something. And it's really because there's a lot of pulling fluid in those areas of the body. And I've had it personally so bad before, especially in the feet, to where I literally could not put on any shoes I owned whatsoever because my feet were so swollen and so huge that I simply couldn't fit my foot in any shoe that I owned. And I'd have to go to my cardiology appointments or follow-ups occasionally just wearing socks. I'd be going out in public only wearing socks because that was my only option. I couldn't put them in shoes. I guess the other option would have been flip-flops, but I don't even know if that would have worked because I would think socks are better than no socks. especially in a hospital where, God, the floor's probably so disgusting. I don't want to put my bare feet anywhere near it, even if there's a flip-flop on it. But anyway, it's been really bad with me before. And in addition to that, edema hurts really bad. It hurts. It's very painful. Because there's all this fluid in areas where there isn't supposed to be a ton of fluid. So you have all this high pressure fluid in these capillaries and smaller blood vessels. And so it hurts terribly. And it hurts terribly to push the fluid out, which is one of the things I would beg people to do off and on throughout my life, to push the fluid out and back towards the heart. And as they did that, the swelling in the foot would actually, you could physically see it drop. And the people doing it could actually physically feel the fluid moving. It's weird. It's kind of creepy. And I would feel it moving in my body through the blood vessels back towards the heart as they pushed it up back to the heart. And it was extremely painful to do that because you're just cranking this high volume of fluid through little capillaries and blood vessels not meant to carry that kind of volume. And even though it hurt to remove it and to just push it out aggressively, when I would finish that, or I guess myself or someone else would finish that, it was like a cure-all. The pain beforehand went away. The swelling was gone. And for like 2 to 3 hours, maybe even half a day or more, it would be like totally liberated of this huge symptom. Huge painful and debilitating symptom of heart failure, because it hurt to get it out, but the pain would slowly get a little bit less as you got more and more blood out of the area, and eventually it wouldn't hurt anymore. And then if you looked at the foot, it's normal size, like magic. And then I could suddenly walk on it, I can put shoes on, and it was like a miracle, you know? So that was a very long explanation of what edema is. And one of the ways they also try, that is medical practitioners try to get rid of the edema, is put you on diuretics. Essentially, all what they're trying to do is make you pee out the fluid. You know, watch your fluid intake. Don't chug a bunch of anything, hopefully. Certainly not liquor, but even, you know, a ton of juice or water, you know, kind of pay attention to your water intake. And take the diuretics so that your body can then pee out all that excess fluid. And so for a very long time, I've been on these draconian monster doses of diuretics. I mean, literally described to me as dinosaur load of heavy diuretics, because they're trying desperately to get the fluid off me. And at least one point, I was just retaining so much fluid, and they were just trying desperately to get me to pee that fluid out. The downside, though, to that is it really depreciates your body's potassium levels and other electrolytes, which is the word I was trying to think of earlier. My God, it just hit me. So they tested my electrolytes. Among them, potassium. Okay. Woo. I knew the word would come back. Anyway. They would prescribe these diuretics, but they'd work at a great expense to the electrolytes and potassium in your body. So even though they had me on draconian doses, they really wanted me to take a ton of potassium with it, because the danger of having low potassium alone is very severe. And I've seen this in those, like, real-life 911 shows, reality shows, where people come into the ER just with these horrific symptoms. And I mean just horrific. And I'm not going to describe them in great detail here. I mean, just terrible things happening to them. And it came down to low potassium. And your body's muscles really needs potassium and other electrolytes to function. Without it, they can't function appropriately. And unfortunately, your heart is just that, a muscle. And so that loses functionality because of low potassium. It's sayonara. You could be doomed. And so when they did this test this last time, I expected a low potassium because I've always battled with it because of the draconian diuretics I've been on. And I've struggled with compliance with taking potassium, not consciously, but they're just these huge, brittle horse pills. As soon as you touched it against your lip or in your mouth, they start coming apart like chalk, and they get stuck in your throat, and they're just dreadful, dreadful pills. And it's not like I have to take one and be done with it. They were having me on 4 of these per day. And so I admit, my compliance with the potassium pills was lackluster. And it wasn't by any conscious decision. I wasn't purposely, actively thinking, ooh, I'm going to not take that today because they suck. It's just because I think subconsciously I would forget about it, not think about it, and fail to take it. And that would happen only really once in a while. It might happen a couple days to 3 days in a row, but that's about as bad as it would get. Sometimes it would just be forgotten on one day, but that's all it takes to have that potassium level just plummet. So I expected my potassium to be low, but the severity of how bad it was by far the worst I have ever seen. That's where I was surprised. I broke an all-time life record of the lowest potassium reading I have ever received on a test ever in my life. That is not a good record to break. And so my medical caregivers were very scared. I bet $20 right now at this moment, they're still scared. because of how low my potassium is. Because I got on the phone with the medical directors right away in my hospice care. And they did not mince words. They said they're gravely concerned by how low the potassium is. And I've got to stick to taking those pills because I'm at major risk of at least heart arrhythmia and easily also death, where I would just essentially my heart would stop functioning and I would die. So one minute I'd be standing there. I don't know what I do when I'm standing there, counting the cans in my cupboard. I don't know what I'd be doing. Whatever, I'd be standing there, and then the next, plop, on the ground, dead. Because my heart would just stop. And so, more than one practitioner, my nurse and other people on the medical side, told me on the phone, we hope you are taking this potassium issue very seriously. And they reiterated that I'm in extremely dangerous territory to where it would be unsurprising for me to have instant death. Now, they could have been really drilling that into me because I'm kind of a troll in real life. Because when I first heard about it, I was texting with my nurse. And she said how so-and-so, the medical directors were really concerned with this level. And I asked her, well, what does that mean? What exactly are they concerned about? And my nurse replied, again, not mincing words, she replied with exactly arrhythmia and death over text. And I replied with, oh, so nothing serious then. That's why I said I'm a troll in real life. So that could have been why they were really hounding me verbally to make sure I took it seriously, because I think that response was unwelcome, even though I was just being a brat. I'm not that flippant, honestly. I was just playing around, but their point was, this is just nothing to play around with. You're gonna die, man, if you don't fix this. So, that was the one result that I did expect, to some extent at least. I didn't expect to be an all-time record for how low it was. And the grave concern that came with it from my medical providers. I was not expecting that. And as I said myself, it was truly the lowest I've ever seen it in my entire life. I even compared it to tests at two other labs that I've had it tested at, over the course of years. And it was still way lower than anything that came back previously. So, that was, I suppose, some I don't know what the term is. I don't want to say unsurprising news, but yeah, I'll put it this way. It was unsurprising news, but the gravity of it was not what I normally would have expected, if that makes sense. And that is the closest I can get to the good news. Because beyond that, there was also some bad news. So, moving on to the other bad news, for lack of a better way of putting it. There's just nothing delightful and no good news from these tests. So yes, moving on to the news that was actually really unexpected. I really was not anticipating this at all, this other news that I heard. But again, my medical team did not mince words. So, and by the way, if any of you are thinking that is terrible bedside manner, how can they just drop that bad news on you like that? Don't worry. I've actually told them to do that many times over the years. All these people know me now. They've known me for years. And I have explicitly instructed them to be blunt, straightforward, and honest with me with respect to what they think is happening or anything related to it. Because, as I put it to them, I'm a band-aid write-off kind of guy. I don't like to skip around the topic. I don't like to cover a turd with glitter, so to speak. It's still a turd. You know, that might have been censored, actually, but what's another way to put it, in case that was censored? If you just heard blank air before me, that means Spotify censored that. But basically, I told him, just tell me what it is. You can't put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig, to borrow someone else's words, who I'm not even going to talk about right now. Anyway, trust me, I've told them this many times before, just drop the news on me, tell it to me like it is, point blank. I don't like dilly-dallying around. So don't think for a moment that this is poor bedside manner, because if they did anything like try to put me down gently, or to soften it, or I don't know. I'd be ticked off and say, get on with it. Tell me what it is, or, you know. So these people know me. They've known me for years, and I've explicitly, repeatedly told them, just tell it to me like it is. And I like blunt, straightforward language. So don't think for a moment these people are just dropping bombs on me without any courtesy, because they're doing exactly what I told them to do, that's just the way I want my doctor to be. I want them to tell me the absolute truth and their analysis of that. So, now that I got that out of the way, the other bad news that they delivered to me, that I did not expect, was I am in kidney failure. Now, I've always known, not always, well, I've known while taking diuretics that they are also hard on the kidneys. And I have seen some kidney depreciation over the years prior to this. And I've been warned about potential kidney failure. And there have been times when I was hospitalized and they were doing these lab tests at 4 o'clock in the morning. If anyone's been in the intensive care unit of hospital, you know what I mean. You're sound asleep and they come in at 4 a.m. and stick needles in you, wake you up with that and say, no, go back to sleep. And while you just got stabbed, basically. And I finally asked them, why do you do that? That is so stupid. You tell your patients to get the rest they need to the hospital. Then you sneak in at 4 a.m. and poke needles in me and run away. What is that? You can't wait till 7? And the answer is, well, they could, but the doctors like to do their rounds in the morning, and they want the lab work done and in their possession while they're doing the rounds that morning. So that 4 a.m. needle prick you get in the hospital, for any of you who have been there, that's why they do it. It's not their fault. It's because your doctor told them to do that so they can have the blood results ready by the time they do their rounds in the morning. Now, why don't they just do their rounds a little bit later in the day? I have no clue. I didn't get into that, because that would be the next question. You know, so anyway, if you ever wondered that, you know, why they do that, don't blame them. Don't blame the lab person. Don't blame the nurses. Blame your doctor when they come in on their rounds and tell them that they're a psychopath for ordering people to stab you at 4 o'clock in the morning and tell you then to get some sleep. I mean, what could it possibly hurt to do your rounds in the early afternoon? What? Your tea time? I don't know. Anyway, as you can see, I have no festering opinion about that practice. But anyway, so I've been warned about kidney failure before, and I've seen depreciated kidney results before. And when I was in the hospital, and if there was any indicia of kidney readings that were indicators for depreciated kidney function, day would sometimes, or oftentimes, or all the time maybe, actually, if I really think about it, would pull back a little bit on the diuretics. Right? Or possibly even skip them until the kidney function returned to normal so they could recover. So I've been well aware of that interaction between diuretics and the kidneys for many years. But while in hospice, I've been on just dinosaur dosages of diuretics day after day after day. And all that time in hospice, they never did blood work ever. Because in their mind, you're already dying. What's the point? Well, now we know what the point of that is. Because apparently now I am officially in full-on kidney failure. And it's not something that they just happened to catch early on. Oh no. It's quite severe and advanced. Because I asked them, well, how bad is the kidney failure? And they said that I am in level 4 kidney failure. There's only 5 levels, of course, they added. And once you get to that 5th level, the only option is just repeated dialysis every few days. And that's not something you can do at home. I can't hook that up in my house. Maybe if I was a multi-billionaire or something, I could do that. But I have a feeling my apartment building would frown upon a dialysis machine being flipped on in my unit and powering out this quadrant of the city. Or something. I don't know. Anyway, level 5, it's end stage. And the only thing they could do then is dialysis or you die. So, I'm not there. I guess that's good news. I'm not at level 5. But, unfortunately, I'm now officially in full-blown kidney failure at level 4. And it's going to only get worse and not better. It's irreversible damage. So, if I were playing a terminal disease bingo game where each spot was some terminal disease, I think with that, by now, I could scream, bingo! Because I think that is now literally the 4th terminal illness I have been diagnosed with. Where, yeah, any one is serious and fatal. I'm walking around this place with 4 tacked on to me. I'm just an overachiever. That's my problem. I'm just an overachiever. So, that was unexpected. And some unfortunate news. And the big news that I really wanted, which is my B, what is it? BNP, not to be confused with a BMP, which is just a basic metabolic panel. The BMP, I think that's what it's called anyway, is the test for, enzymes in the heart that are produced by excessive stress or damage being done to the heart. And that's usually how they diagnose heart failure to begin with. So I already know I'm way above the normal. Right. So I get in this fight with my hospice providers because they say, well, you're already in heart failure. Why do you want this number again? And my answer is because, well, I've got several points of data, at least two now, where my BNP is showing two different levels, both above the normal threshold indicating heart failure. And it's certainly between those two points at a it's certainly on an escalation between those two points. But that's all I got in data. I really want a third point on top of those two to discern the velocity of the damage continuously being done to my heart, to perhaps give me better insight into how severe is my heart being damaged year over year over year, and can through knowing that at least make better decisions for myself and my life with what remains left of it. For example, if it shows an incredible velocity of just exponential growth, this April 15th, I'm not going to really stress out about taxes. I'll get a deferral or something, or put it on a payment plan that's egregious and goes out to 2075 or something. You know what I mean? But if it's not showing that level, if it's showing it's steadily or slowly increasing, or perhaps decreasing but still elevated, I'd make a wiser decision of handling my 2024 return in a much shorter period of time. That's just one example. But my point is, knowing that velocity will enable me to make better decisions in my life, to some extent, at least, versus not knowing at all. So, That was just one example. I'm sure I could think of many more. Honestly, one other more sincere example that I've actually had cross my mind is, am I in any position to start a new relationship? Because if we're looking at a rapid, like I said, a huge exponential growth of continuous heart damage, frankly, I'm really going to hold back on the desire to have another special someone in my life at this point. Because more than likely, I'm just going to put them through hell. And no one deserves that. Now, if something happens accidentally, I probably would let it happen. But I certainly wouldn't actively pursue it, is what I'm saying. But if it's more at a differential or velocity to where I could perhaps last a little bit longer than expected, then maybe I would consider another personal relationship. So that's another example, a very serious example, I think. Along with taxes, those are probably the two most serious examples I could think of. But knowing more will enable me to live my life in a way that is not just most fortuitous to me, but also not in any way destructive to my fellow creatures on this earth. Because I in no way want to tear down someone else while trying to seek comfort for myself. I will have to find comfort through another means. At least I know not to pursue that kind of comfort. If it happens, it happens. Honestly, I wouldn't sabotage it. But at the same time, I wouldn't pursue it. And that's really all I'm saying. And then I could more dedicate myself to pursue other comforts that would not just leave some poor sod holding an empty sack while I'm dead and gone. Because I don't want that to happen to anyone unnecessarily. So, that's sort of my thinking. Anyway, that, in summary, is the blood results that I got. And now you see why I said it. I'm really grasping at straws to find a silver lining to any of this. All I can say is some of it was bad, and some of it was really bad news. That's about it. So, once again, I'm dealt a pretty lousy hand. And I got to figure out how I'm going to play this. With all that being shared in this podcast, I think I'm going to wrap it up now. Just because those are certainly some pretty heavy topics. It's kind of hard to deviate to something else in the same context, I suppose, when you're talking about things that are of such severe gravitas. So, I think I'm just gonna leave this week's podcast at that. Now, I actually did wonder one other thing recently that I thought of discussing. And I was just playing around with my dog, actually, between these segments here of recording. And what struck me was, what the heck is that weird thumb claw-like thing on their leg? Like, not on the paw. Their paw is 4 digits, right? But then they have like this weird, like, thumb 5th digit. Like, well, I guess it depends on the size of the dog, but up the leg, like, a good distance. And it just sits there. It's like a random nail and appendage that doesn't do anything up on the leg. What is that? What's that for? So, that's really my only other topic. So I'll let that be. Actually, in all seriousness, the good news is that I do have a very wonderful companion through all of this. And that, of course, is my dog, and he's fully licensed as my emotional support animal. And pretty much wherever I go, he goes. And if it wasn't for his presence, I don't know how I would be handling all of these circumstances. Instead, I find myself, rather than wallowing in self-pity of any kind, playing silly games with my dog and wondering what that weird digit's for on the side of the leg. I'm gonna have to Google that. But no, in all seriousness, if it wasn't for my companion, my dog, and his emotional support, I do know I would be in a much more terrible place emotionally than I am now. So, he's definitely worth it for the emotional support. And it's truly amazing how taking care of another innocent creature can totally just recalibrate your mind and prevent you from wallowing in self-pity. There still is not a single 24-hour period where I go without laughing hysterically out loud because of something my dog did or something that we were playing together. So, emotional support animals are truly an amazing, not cure, I don't know what you call it, they're an amazing stabilizer. And can really give you so much joy in life, even when you're faced with the grimmest circumstances. It's just amazing that the right animal can do that to you. I guess a lot of people, I almost said some people, but I'm sure it's more than that. But yeah. Lately in some of these podcasts, I've been leaving some advice to others if they're going through any similar circumstances that I've touched on. And I'm a big proponent of journaling, keeping a journal of your thoughts, and using it as a means to self-reflect. For honestly, anybody, I don't care if you're even experiencing absolutely nothing traumatic. I think journaling is a tremendous tool at maintaining emotional strength and durability. And I know I've also said a few other things here and there that I kind of recommend to others. And today I'm just adding, taking care of someone else in your life. And it doesn't have to be a human. It could be a dog, in my case. It could be, honestly, a horse. It could be a lot of things. But to have an animal or a person to care for and depend upon you is actually a very liberating feeling. It can unbind you from depression or sadness so easily. It's remarkable. So, in keeping with the spirit of throwing out random advice to others, I will add, taking care of an animal, having an emotional support animal of some sort, is a great way to find peace, even in the face of dire circumstances. But that's also, I think, just human nature. I know I've shared this quote before, but it touches on this very topic, actually. And that was, courage is what often follows great suffering or ailments, not cowardice, as some might otherwise think. I'm paraphrasing here, but that was something close to what Christopher Hitchens wrote, actually, on his deathbed, as he was dying of throat cancer. Being in those dire straits precedes great courage. In the face of calamity. And I think that's true. And I think he was one to know. he wrote that from his deathbed while he was dying of throat cancer. Now I am paraphrasing the quote. I could dress it up and pull out the real quote if I wanted, but that's more or less what he wrote. And you can find it in his final book called Mortality. How appropriately. But that was actually published after his death by his surviving wife, and it's a collection of really him reflecting on mortality and other various things until his dying moment. And it's amazing if you read this book. It starts so familiar, as if you've read Hitchens before. It starts so well drafted and so well organized and thought out and pinpoint accurate in the message that it was delivering. And as time goes on, there's less editing. And then it kind of just becomes a jumbled collection of thoughts towards the end that don't really relate to one another. I mean, there's a lot of non sequiturs towards the end, but all of them are per his usual self, very deep thoughts, but just kind of jumbled. And apparently that's how he liked to write. He would often compose a series of things, paragraphs, and be very jumbled. And then he'd kind of edit it and put it together as he worked through it. But as things came to his mind, he would write them down right away. And they may in the moment be a non sequitur, but then he would later edit it into a particular position or chapter in the book to where it flowed. At least that's what I was reading about it. That was just how he wrote. And so as it got to the end of that book, Mortality, there was less and less editing, really. He wasn't losing his mind. It was more virgin in its writing process and not yet refined, as he so often would do that later when writing a piece. At least that's what I heard of it. But it's incredible to see that change in the book as he slowly died of cancer. And again, the book is called Mortality by Christopher Hitchens. It's actually a very short read, certainly short versus all of his other books. But it's a very interesting read. If you ever get a chance, I recommend it. But on that note, I am going to wrap it. And thank you sincerely, as always. I really mean it. Thank you so much for giving me the time to hear my thoughts on these topics. As garbled as they may occasionally be, I deeply appreciate you giving my voice a chance to be heard before I drift away into that permanent bliss. If you want to support this podcast further, you can go to the Spotify homepage or patreon.com/mydogwilleatmyface and support the podcast. I drop in a little shekel in the tip jar. But truth being told, if you've made it this far, you've already done more than I could ever ask. And I really thank you for your time. But until we speak again in coming days, I'll say ciao for now.